FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Brett also joined along in the production booth by Eric Nelson. They're saying 4 to 6 inches of snow Saturday night into Sunday. And what is your mathematical formula for coming up with how much snow we're actually going to get?
Take the square root of it and then add or subtract one.
Add or subtract one. Okay.
So we might see 2 inches.
2 inches of snow. I think you're probably right. They underestimate these storms every single time. And it goes back to, I still talk about this many times, that January of 2018 snowstorm, which was actually the day after the Vikings lost in the NFC Championship. I just specifically remember that. That is the one storm where they underpredicted the amount of snow we were expected to get, and everyone got burned on that, including a lot of kids who went to public schools that ended up not getting bused home till like 9 or 10 o'clock in St. Paul. They've just been scared about underreporting their snow amounts, I think, ever since then, Eric.
Yeah, so the consequences of underreporting are just definitely worse.
Just one time when they missed it, one time, and all of a sudden, yeah, every snowstorm is now the storm of the century. All right, let's move on to some news for today, though, because we actually do have some big news in the healthcare industry. As SEIU Healthcare Minnesota members at Health Partners voted overwhelmingly yesterday to approve a 7-day unfair labor practices strike for 1,800 members by a pretty overwhelming margin, 95% to 5%. The vote was held yesterday for 15 hours at 5 locations across the Twin Cities, as the contract between Health Partners and the SEIU Healthcare Minnesota workers did expire on January 31st. So the union members announced that the 10-day strike notice would be filed today, and if no agreement is reached, workers would then begin their 7-day strike on the morning of Wednesday, February 19th. So joining us to talk about this possible strike and where some of the talks have broken down between the Healthcare Workers Union and Health Partners are both Kate and Jean, who are longtime Health Partners members who are on the bargaining team, and they actually spoke at this morning's announcement about that possible strike. So Kate and Jean, thanks so much for joining me on the program today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Absolutely. So can you tell us, kind of summarize why you guys ended up voting yes to authorize this possible strike?
We voted yes to authorize this strike because of the cuts to our health care benefits and the cost shifting to our members with co-pays, increasing just our general health care, our general health care premiums.
Okay, so let's talk about this, because it sounded like Health Partners wanted to roll back some of the benefits you guys were getting on your current health insurance plans that you have right now, I believe, with them. Is that kind of essentially what the crux of the dispute you guys have with them is?
Yes, absolutely.
So what sorts of cuts are they proposing to make with your current benefits?
So it would be increasing premium costs, increasing co-pays, increasing pharmacy costs, emergency room visits, urgent care visits, family coverage. And we have what's called a choice plan that people can choose to go outside of the health partner system, say if your child was away at college in another state, that those premiums would increase also.
And what you guys are looking for is not necessarily a big expansion of your current benefits. You're kind of looking to keep things at the current level where they're at right now, along with that traditional 2% raise, correct?
Yep, that is correct. Absolutely.
So what are some of the reasons why Health Partners has been pushing to make these cuts to your benefits? What have they been telling you guys?
They've been telling us that our health care is getting more expensive, and therefore we as employees need to take on a bigger burden for that.
So, and you guys do represent a whole lot of workers as well that are with Health Partners. Overall, I believe it's 1,800 people, and it's a lot of different fields, including registered nurses, also dental hygienists, LPMs, CMAs, just a whole lot of people that you're probably going to interact with if you end up at the hospital. These are a lot of people that your union represents, correct?
Correct, but we're in the clinic system, not at the hospital.
Gotcha.
But we encounter these people in our everyday life. They're all part of us. So we, like you said, we actually cover 80 plus classifications at 30 clinics. So it's a huge amount of people that are involved in this in different job categories.
And chances are people are probably going to interact with you guys much more than they might even interact with their own doctors, kind of what I'm kind of guessing as well, correct?
Absolutely. We're the frontline caregivers.
Exactly. So what has the relationship been like with Health Partners Management in the past? Has it usually been a pretty smooth relationship with them, or has it always been kind of a somewhat rocky slash tumultuous relationship you've had with them?
So we've never really had a tumultuous, rocky relationship with Health Partners in the past. It's always been, we've been able to come to an agreement. We've been able to work collaboratively. We already did. We saved the company over $1 million by working collaboratively on a healthcare cost committee where we had members doing things to save the health plan money. This time it just felt different. It just felt more disrespectful, and there were huge cuts. And it's kind of on the backs of the people who are doing the work.
Yeah, and one of the things you guys cite, despite them making these cuts, is the fact that they are making a record-breaking $7 billion in revenue. It also looks like they doubled the CEO, or doubled the pay of their CEO, Andrea Walsh, to $2 million per year. So, yeah, I can kind of get where you guys are coming from, where they're saying, hey, we need you guys to make these benefits cuts, but then you're looking at the fact that the company is making a record amount of revenue, and then, of course, you have the CEO also doubling her pay. So I can see how that's probably right. Rubbing you guys the wrong way there.
A little bit. It doesn't sit well with people who don't make that kind of money every year.
Yeah, let's talk about this as well, because doing a little reading on this, it sounds like you guys are actually paid a little below market rate compared to some of the other workers that work for other companies in your same fields, correct?
That is correct. And the reason that we are, and the reason that we accept that, is because of the benefits we have. Health Partners has always used their healthcare benefits as a recruiting tool for new employees. And new employees come in and know that they aren't getting paid the best, but they have the best benefits. And right now we can hardly recruit even with these benefits.
I think that's important to point out as well, because it's not just in Minnesota, it's nationally where we do have a major shortage of healthcare workers. So I imagine if you guys do end up going on strike, even if Health Partners were to try to find scabs to take your place, that would be a very difficult thing to do.
Exactly. And part of that is, too, is because like we mentioned before, there are 80 classifications that Health Partners SEIU covers. And there's no way that we can't even recruit nurses to fill open positions. How can they cover all of these 80 positions and still give the quality care that we give day in and day out?
Yeah, it just strikes me as being very backwards, where if you actually have, it seems like a very simple supply and demand equation to me, where if you have a supply of workers that's, well, not as high as you'd want it, you probably can't afford to actually be paying them lower salaries and cutting their benefits. So have they been giving any indication that they're considering making any moves or possibly restoring some of these cuts? What's the latest you've heard from management?
So they've sent out emails saying that they're disappointed in the vote, that they're willing to go back to the table is what we today. And we're working with a federal mediator, so we'll see if we can get something scheduled to go back to the table next week.
Okay, so yeah, in terms of what happens next, so next week you'll go to the negotiating table. You'll have it's a federal mediator. This is a term I'm not quite familiar with. Can you describe what this person actually does?
So he comes in and he is an impartial party hired by the federal government, that he just comes in and makes sure both parties keep talking, that we keep making moves until we get to a stalemate where we can't come together anymore. So he just makes sure that we keep talking. He's impartial. He doesn't take their side or our side.
And as I imagine, either management or even your side with the union don't necessarily have to take whatever recommendations this neutral person makes, but it is kind of a way to maybe lessen some of the tension in the room when you do have that neutral party there.
Absolutely.
So if you guys do end up going on strike, this would take place again as I look through on the morning of Wednesday, February 19th. What does that look like? So you guys would be on strike for, it looks like, 1 week, correct? What happens correct. If we do unfortunately reach that situation?
So we will go out on strike that morning. We haven't worked out exactly what all the details are. We're trying to make sure that we have enough people to picket as many clinics as we can. But right now we're just focusing on which ones are the bigger ones.
Mm-hmm. So where are your clinics located all over Minnesota and in the Twin Cities area?
Yeah, they're all over the Twin City metro area. There's 30 plus locations. They have them spread out everywhere. So geographically, it's all over the metro.
Gotcha. We've been speaking with Kate and Jean. They are both longtime healthcare members who were part of the bargaining team and also spoke at this morning's announcement talking about the possible strike that the SEIU Healthcare Minnesota members for healthcares might go on, again, starting on Wednesday, February 19th. Hey, Kate, Jean, really appreciate you joining me on the program today and giving us some more details about this labor situation at Health Partners.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, and best of luck. You're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We'll get to some more local and state news coming up next on the program.
Get a head start on this year's Blue State Ball by having dinner with me, Tom Hartman, on Saturday, February 22nd at Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club. It's your chance to discuss with me the big issues facing the country in a small, intimate setting. You can guarantee your spot at the February 22nd dinner by pre-purchasing a ticket for $200. Tickets are very limited and will go fast. So reserve your spot now by calling 952-946-8885. More details at am950radio.com.
If you or someone you know needs dental care but can't afford it, go to Shamblot Family Dentistry's 14th annual Dentistry from the Heart event on Wednesday, February 12th, beginning at 7 a.m. It's a day of free dentistry for those in need. All patients will be seen on a first-come, first-served basis. No appointment required. Dentistry from the Heart provides free, limited dental care to those in need. This event is for new patients. Since 20% of adults know they have cavities but haven't had them filled, and over 100 million Americans lack dental insurance, this event meets a huge need in our community. Shamblot Family Dentistry has given away almost $400,000 in free dentistry through Dentistry from the Heart. Again, Dentistry from the Heart is Wednesday, February 12th, beginning at 7 a.m. at Shamblot Family Dentistry in Hopkins at 33 10th Avenue South and at their new St. Paul location, 400 Selby Avenue in the Blair Arcade Building. It's first come, first served, so arrive early.
Dad, you're gonna force me to read this opening, aren't you?
Don't make me start posting on TikTok.
My dad is a double threat, both radio and TV, Matt McNeil.
I was on C-SPAN.
Well, my dad's style is in question, Toyota's isn't. After I get my license, I'd love to be driving a sleek RAV4 hybrid, a Camry hybrid, or a Prius. They're always in style.
Rudy Luther Toyota has an incredible selection of great vehicles, many with a hybrid version. See for yourself at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Stop in at Next Chapter Booksellers to find the perfect Valentine's Day gift for your significant other. They have a wide variety of books and lots of opportunities to meet local authors, like Jay Wiener on Sunday, February 16th at 2 p.m. He edited a new book about famous Minnesota history professor Hi Berman's very last lecture. That's Next Chapter Booksellers, where you can meet local authors and find that perfect Valentine's Day gift. Located on Grand and Snelling in St. Paul and at nextchapterbooksellers.com.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is all digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
It's FYI Politics with Brett Johnson on your Friday afternoon. Open phone lines for the rest of the hour as we're at 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So no matter what your thoughts are on unions, whether you like them or you're not a big fan of them, I would just think if there's one industry where you probably want employees to be well paid, it would be healthcare workers. I mean, if I'm sitting there as a patient or at a hospital, or if I'm interacting with someone at some sort of clinic, if I'm at a doctor's visit, yeah, I probably want those employees that I'm primarily going to be interacting with to actually have good benefits, to actually be well paid. That would just strike me as probably being a good thing rather than actually having someone service you that is overworked, not getting paid well. Yeah, so it just seems logical to me, no matter what your thoughts are on unions, you probably do want healthcare workers that are making a good living and also making it appealing so that people actually want to go into that industry, because that has been a big problem with healthcare, the fact that there is a major shortage, not just in Minnesota, but nationally as well. So we'll have to see. Yeah, go ahead, Eric. Oh yeah.
It always just blows me away when you hear about how little EMTs and nurses make. Because everyone knows, you know, doctors make pretty good money.
Yeah.
And who you're interacting with most of the time are the nurses and the EMTs, you know, the workers.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, at least 80% of your time is probably interacting with them, if not more. I mean, when you go to a doctor's office, you're usually talking to the nurse or some of the other assistants in. Yeah, then maybe you get to spend a couple of minutes with the doctor. I like that you brought up EMT as well, because they are criminally underpaid. Yeah. I had a friend who originally, well, she wanted to go in and be a paramedic, and she ended up leaving the industry altogether because, well, she lives down in Texas, but she was making like $12 an hour.
Yeah,
$12 an hour. Just actually, it might have been even lower than $12 an hour. It might have been down like towards 9 when you're just starting out in that position. Yeah. And think about that. You're calling a paramedic come to your house, and yeah, they're making $9 an hour.
Well, this is a job where you're going to have to see the most gruesome, awful things every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And you deal with that for $9 an hour?
$9 an hour. And yeah, usually, depending on your situation, that ride from the ambulance to the hospital, that can be life or death in that situation. I mean, if you're having a heart attack, what could be happening in that ambulance could determine whether you live or whether you die. So do you really want someone there that's making about as much as someone who's a clerk at Walmart? No disrespect to people who are clerks at Walmarts, but that's a pretty high responsibility position if you're actually a paramedic.
You don't want them stressed out about other stuff and
sleep
deprived because they had to work a second job.
Exactly, yeah. Someone that's working 80 hours a week because they're pulling a double shift and they can't afford their rent, so that's why they're working that much. Yeah, so if there's one industry that always should actually be paid, probably even a little above market rate, it would be healthcare workers for sure. Got to bring this up, at least in terms of national news, just to kind of get this off my chest here, Eric, and I don't know if you agree with me on this as well. I don't like the fact that a lot of Democrats and liberals are turning Mitt Romney into some sort of saint.
Thank you.
I mean, yeah, his speech on the Senate floor was good, but let's be honest. If that vote were really 50-50, or I guess in the case of, since there's 100 senators, 50-49, the first question would be, would he actually cast the tie-breaking vote to remove Trump from office? Well, actually, I got to circle back. If the vote for 66-33 and he were casting the 67th vote, that's the question I'm looking for right there. Would he actually be the person that would vote yes to convict? That's one question right there. And then, do we really have that short term a memory to know, going back to 2012, that Mitt Romney is not your friend? Mm-hmm. Just think about all of those policies he proposed during the 2012 presidential campaign.
Oh, yeah. And when people talk about it like, oh, he's showing how moral and ethical he is. Like, this is the guy in charge of Bain Capital?
Yeah. Bain Capital, which, by the way, I'm going to talk about this still on a future show. That's one of the big firms that has essentially ruined radio around the entire country. They were one of these hedge fund firms that ended up buying the debt of, I'm trying to think of the company that Red McCombs used to head. It wasn't Clear Channel, but basically what happened was Red McCombs and his firm bought a bunch of radio stations around the country after the 1996 Telecommunications Act. Then from there, Mitt Romney's Bain Capital firm ended up purchasing that debt. They, of course, put a management fee on when they borrowed a bunch of money to buy those radio stations. They then sold off those radio stations yet again, where it just ends up being an endless circle of these companies charging management fees and interest. So that's how they actually make their money.
Well, you show that you've turned a profit because you fire everyone but the absolutely most critical people. And then for a quarter, hey, our costs are down.
We'll talk much more about this in detail on a future show. But yeah, that's Mitt Romney in charge of Bain Capital. So as you're listening to the radio right now, well, he's also responsible for ruining radio around the country. And yeah, he's apparently this big moral, ethical guy because he took one vote to convict Trump and remove him from office. And then there's this as well. So let's talk about his tenure actually as Utah's U.S. Senator. So he's put through this bill, which would have potentially some major cuts to Social Security. He's been trying to get this bill passed called the Trust Act. It's Senate File 2733. And this bill would establish a rescue committee for Social Security. Oh, if there's two things that go together, it's Mitt Romney and rescuing. That certainly makes me feel a whole lot better. So he would establish this rescue committee for Social Security that would fast-track a process that would lead to devastating cuts for Social Security. So when they project and say things like, oh, well, the program's going to go bankrupt in 2033 or 2035, instead of going through the usual channels to potentially make benefit cuts, well, this bill proposed by Romney would allow them to fast-track that process. Again, Mr. Ethical, Mr. Christian, Mitt Romney.
But they're saving Social Security from themselves.
I just love the fact that we include rescue and Mitt Romney in the same sentence. Mitt Romney is not interested in rescuing anybody or anything other than himself. Again, go back and look at his history over at Bain Capital. Speaking of another Republican who is being perceived as ethical, but probably isn't when you look more at his past, this is Joe Walsh, now the former presidential candidate for the Republican nomination who is trying to challenge Donald Trump. So Joe Walsh had some interesting comments today as he announced that he is withdrawing from seeking the Republican nomination. He said in a Twitter post, "I would rather have a socialist in the White House than a dictator." Strong words there from Joe Walsh. And he also accused the Republican Party of being cult-like as well. So Joe Walsh, not wrong in those statements, but still don't elevate this guy to sainthood or anything like that. If you look at his past, he was instrumental in allowing the Tea Party movement of 2010 to come to fruition. He was one of the craziest senators we actually had during that congressional session of 2011 and 2012, where the Tea Party was proposing all sorts of crazy bills. So, yeah, even though he's making statements saying, oh, I would rather have a socialist in the White House than a dictator, even if you were to get this guy in some sort of elected position, he's still not your friend, similar to Mitt Romney.
And he opposes Trump on a lot of things where it's like, oh, Trump is too lenient. If Trump wants a wall, he wants a wall with turrets on it.
In some cases, you're absolutely right, where Trump isn't extreme enough on a number of positions. That's where part of the opposition with Joe Walsh to Donald Trump has been. So, yeah, be careful when you try to elevate politicians to sainthood, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, and especially a couple of these Republicans that liberals and Democrats like citing, like Mitt Romney and Joe Walsh. And haven't heard as much about Bill Weld. I think he's still in the presidential race seeking that Republican nomination. I mean, he did get a whopping 1.7% in the Iowa caucuses, which is actually more than I thought he would get. I was predicting Trump would get 99% and then maybe you get like a few hundred votes for Walsh or Bill Weld. So maybe that Trump wall, so to speak, is finally cracking with Bill Weld.
With that whole 1%?
Yeah, that
1.7.
Don't undercount him. That 0.7% that Mr. Weld was able to get in the Iowa caucuses. We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up next, we are going to be talking about some local and state issues, including the legislature wanting to expand Ban the Box. I have some thoughts on why Ban the Box is an idea that kind of backfires in a lot of cases. We'll also talk about opioids and police reform in Minneapolis. That's all on the way next. But first, let's get to Art Beat for the Week here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, as you are listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Here is Art Beat.
This Art Beat for the week. I'm Elizabeth Horub, co-host of Connections Radio Show, and today I'll be letting you in on a couple of arts events you're going to want to attend in the Twin Cities area this Saturday. Tomorrow, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., Ouija Studios presents Illustrators Pop-Up, an artist market featuring illustrators in a variety of styles and media at the new Art 967 Payne Building, a collaborative studio and co-working space for artists. An illustration is a drawing, painting, or printed work of art which explains, clarifies, illuminates, visually represents, or merely decorates a written text which may be of a literary or commercial nature. There are many types of illustrators, and so this event aims to introduce you to the many talented individuals here in Minnesota. This event includes an artist market, chill lo-fi music, and free cookies and tea while supplies last. This is a family-friendly event with free admission. Go to www.ouijastudio.com for more information on their illustrators pop-up. Also this Saturday at 10:30 p.m., get on out to see Director's Cut, Big Mouth. Director's Cut is a monthly comedy show at Phoenix Theater that brings you familiar characters from television with a twist. Each director's cut involves an episode from a show with a zealous director at the helm who makes the cast jump through random tangents or side stories mid-scene. It's a little script, a little improv, and a lot ridiculous. This month's show is an episode of Big Mouth. Tickets are $12 unless you want to give female-driven comedy a little extra love with a $15 superfan ticket, but all tickets are general admission. Go to www.phoenixtheatermpls.org for more information and to reserve your tickets today. That's Art Beat for the week. I'm Elizabeth Horub, co-host of Connections Radio Show, airing live Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
This is Chad, owner of AM950. Our station has worked with Barbara from WYSIWYG Web Design for years on everything from logo to print design and especially for developing our website. She does great work and is great to work with, listening to what our goals and design ideas were while offering new, innovative ideas to create the website we are proud of today. Barbara made sure she understood our station, our goals, and our mission before she started working on our site and made suggestions to help control the cost. Plus, she's friendly, which set us at ease. I recommend Barbara at WYSIWYG Web Design because I know she will deliver an attractive, professional website within the budget you have. She is a local independent business that specializes in helping other local businesses achieve their website and design goals. She can work with nearly any budget and create anything from simple sites to robust custom functionality. To find out more about the company AM950 Trust, go to WYSIWYGWebDesign.com. Spelled out just like it sounds, WYSIWYGWebDesign.com.
Moe's Tax Service, family-owned and operated since 1971, providing a full spectrum of tax preparation and associated services. Think about it. Why would you take your most important financial information to a franchise operation with a cheap basic package that goes up dramatically once you're in the door? You can find out all you need to know about Moe's by visiting www.moestax.com. That's M-O-H-S-Tax.com. Or call them at 612-721-2026. Don't be a blockhead. Go to the professionals at Moe's Tax Service.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Today, expect cloudy skies and a high near 31. Tonight, a 30% chance of snow after 10 p.m. and low around 19. Tomorrow there's a chance the snow continue with cloudy skies and a high near 27 and a low of 12. Saturday will be partly sunny with a high of 22 and a low of 17.
Don't miss the Healthy Life Expo this Saturday and Sunday at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Up to 200 vendors, 4 speaker stages, giveaways, and more. The Healthy Life Expo this Saturday and Sunday at the Minneapolis Convention Center. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
It's FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. We are live on this Friday afternoon, taking your phone calls for the rest of the hour at 952-946-9400. 625-952-9466205. Do want to get to a few of these local stories in terms of police reform in Minneapolis, and following a recommendation from someone that we actually interviewed last fall, as this person was perhaps foreshadowing what the Minneapolis Police Department might do. We'll get to that in a few minutes, as well as opioids and why ban the box might not necessarily be the best idea. But first, got our buddy Randy in St. Cloud, who wants to talk about everyone's favorite chairman of the DNC, Tom Perez, who still somehow, Randy, is holding his position. He has not resigned yet. Isn't that unreal?
And I don't even hear enough of the, like, high-end Democrats saying something about it.
Well, he's part of that entire apparatus around the DNC. And this is what I heard Matt talking about this a little bit yesterday, and I think it's what the entire problem is. You have such a closed loop of all of these DNC, I don't know if I necessarily call them elites, because that would actually show that they actually know how to operate their organization, but right. Just a bunch
like
of people
clubhouse.
That are, yeah, they're just, yeah, exactly. They're a clubhouse of people that are in very much a closed circle, and yeah, unless those people within that circle want Perez gone, he's probably going to stay there.
Well, and then, you know, I talk to people and they go, oh, you're one of those conspiracy theorists. I go, This isn't a theory, and it's not a conspiracy. Well, it is a conspiracy, but it's not a theory. It's actuality. Look who he just appointed to all of the committees to run the DNC and to run the convention. They're all people who hate Bernie. I mean, almost entirely. There's like two people who are held over from when Bernie had the power to put some people on the DNC. And then there's people on there who work directly. They're on the Rules Committee, and they work directly for Bloomberg. He gives them a ton of money, and they drop the rule that you have to have a whole bunch of grassroots support to get in the debate. They just got rid of that.
Oh,
why?
Is he in the debate tonight?
He gave him over $1 million. In various ways, because you have to do it sneakily here and there. You can't do it all in one swell, one big check, which would be easier. But it's just, and Buttigieg, they announced that he won the Iowa caucus. No, he didn't. But they let that ride for 3 days, and now he's moved up like 8 points in New Hampshire because he got to walk around saying, I won the Iowa caucus.
Well, just to clarify, at least on Pete Buttigieg, he did win kind of the electoral strategy of the Iowa caucuses. In terms of the popular vote in the state, yeah, that actually, I believe, did go to Bernie Sanders.
Well, no, that's part of what Perez is doing right now. He didn't even win all of the delegate votes because they're recounting everything because they saw...
The re-canvass,
because they saw that the strategy that Sanders' campaign put out for the satellite caucus spots was hugely successful. And Tom Perez is always talking about unity, and we got to bring in the disenfranchised and the people of color and the Latinos, and we're going to bring them all together into the big tent. But that's exactly why he stopped that, why he did the re-canvass, because they were going to announce that actually Bernie did win. You know, And then look at Buttigieg when people were asking him, do you think you were a little premature in saying that you won? And he just keeps that smarmy little smile and keeps walking and won't answer anybody and gets in the car and he drives away waving. No, I'm fine. Everything's good. I got just what I wanted. So anyway, there's just so many things that Tom Perez should be long gone. And you know, it should have been Keith Ellison all along, and that got
That's
submarine.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether or not you believe in the conspiracy, I think it's pretty much not even arguable that he's been incompetent handling it.
Yeah, that's the route I'm going to go. And thanks so much for the call there, Randy. I disagree that they're specifically targeting Bernie Sanders because he's a democratic socialist. I think he's unintentionally being targeted in a way in that he's not part of that inner circle of people who are at the top of the Democratic Party leadership. If he were to, yeah, make that big donation that Mike Bloomberg made, then yeah, he probably would work his way into the circle. And as you brought up too, Eric, it's mostly just incompetence because these people are so disconnected from reality. They just function within their own little bubble that they do just screw up just about everything they end up touching, including this Mike Bloomberg thing. I mean,
well, I personally kind of believe in the conspiracy too, but if it was not even there, yeah, definitely, then yeah, he'd still be, there'd be a reason to get rid of him.
The incompetence has to be there because were they not sitting there thinking about the optics of allowing potentially Mike Bloomberg onto the debate stage and not realizing how awful that makes them look, not just to people who obviously don't like the DNC that are supporters of Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, but even the other candidates can't be thrilled about that.
Yang
and supporters
would be pissed.
Of them. Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about how hard Yang's worked, and I'm sure he has more support than Bloomberg.
The national
at least
polls,
grassroots.
Grassroots support. Yeah, absolutely. In the national polls, what's his face? Bloomberg has actually risen quite a bit where he's even overtaken, I believe, fourth place in at least the RCP polling average. So he has risen there. But yeah, you still got to play by the rules. I mean, when you have Cory Booker and Amy Klobuchar, do you remember last fall when Cory Booker was spending like $5 million on Facebook ads just to get like $500 of Facebook dollar donations? All these people had to spend all of this money on ridiculous advertising, and now all of a sudden, oh, those rules are out the window.
Well, you just have to give it to the DNC.
Mm-hmm. Although, speaking of conspiracies, maybe it is a conspiracy against Mike Bloomberg. And hear me out here, Eric. Do you really think Mike Bloomberg actually wants to be on a debate stage with all those other candidates?
Yes.
You think he does?
Yeah,
I don't think he does.
I think that he in his mind thinks that he'll, like, give everyone the like straight facts that he's not going to play these games.
I don't know.
Just the things that I've seen from him make me
He doesn't strike me as being a good debater, and he's so ripe for being attacked by all sides on that debate stage. I think maybe Tom Perez is actually pro-Bernie Sanders. No, just kidding on that. But a different angle to look at, because I do wonder if part of Mike Bloomberg doesn't want any part of actually going on that debate stage.
I don't disagree that it might unintentionally help Bernie.
Yeah, it very well could. And that could be, again, the incompetence of what you see among the DNC leadership. Overall, they need a complete overhaul. I don't care which candidate they support. They just need new leadership entirely that actually is somewhat connected to reality. That's not part of just this.
Ideally, they wouldn't support any candidates.
Yeah, well, that would certainly be a good start. Yeah, how about actually having leadership of a party that's actually neutral in terms of whether they support one candidate over another? We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. All right, so these local stories that I was mentioning, I want to follow up on something we were talking about a little bit during that healthcare conversation. Well, this is at least somewhat related to this. Pretty shocking stat about opioids in Minnesota. This actually comes from the Star Tribune today, where they're saying that nearly twice as many healthcare providers licensed to prescribe an opioid addiction treatment compared to 2 years ago are not available in rural Minnesota. So 32 rural counties in Minnesota still actually lack providers that have obtained the necessary federal-approved guidelines to prescribe the drug that's called Suboxone, which is kind of known as the gold standard for addiction treatment. So 32 counties in rural Minnesota don't have any facilities that have the ability to prescribe that drug, and they're not treatment facilities whatsoever. So this would strike me as being a pretty much a no-brainer to invest some money into this, maybe through the bonding bill or from the general fund in the legislature this year. And by the way, it is a failure again of where the private companies are not coming through, because I imagine if you're talking about some rural county in northern Minnesota, yeah, if you're a private company trying to set up a clinic there, probably not a lot of profit to be made. So at some point, yeah, there actually is a place for having a public institution or a public place, like some area that could actually use a clinic that would treat opioids. Also want to talk about this. So this is from the Minneapolis Police Department. They're considering changing their rules where they would limit overtime to 50 hours per week for some of their police officers. And this actually harkens back to a conversation I had with Kimberly Decker, who I interviewed last fall on the old Minnesota Progressive Repartee. She's from this group called Minneapolis for a Better Police Contract, and she's been citing this for quite some time, that there effectively right now are no regulations on the number of hours that police officers can work in Minneapolis. And this kind of relates to our conversation about healthcare workers that we had at the beginning of the show. No matter your thoughts on whether we should have police or whether we shouldn't have police, if we are going to have cops, I probably don't want to be getting pulled over by somebody who's worked 80 hours already, that's fatigued, and is probably in a lousy mood, because I don't know about you, Eric, if I end up working 80 hours and I'm approaching that 79th or 80th hour, I'm not exactly going to be in a very happy mood, probably not going to be very alert, and oh yeah, what could possibly go wrong if you have someone that's working 80 hours a week that has access to a gun and probably a short temper at that point? So Minneapolis is considering making some changes, as also the city council and Mayor Jacob Fry are looking at ways where they could develop some changes in terms of how they could manage overtime. Again, Kimberly Decker's recommendation with Minneapolis for a Better Police Contract was a 50-hour limit. At least the police in Minneapolis are considering those changes, although there's still others that they should probably make, including mandatory mental health screening that was recommended by Decker back in our interview last fall, which you can go back and find at am950radio.com. Then also want to talk about this before we head to our final break of the show. Are you aware of what Ban the Box is? In case you're not, Ban the Box is an initiative that tries to prevent employers from asking that question on job applications, have you been convicted of a felony? I remember filling out some job applications back in the day that where we were asked that question. Have you been convicted of a felony? Yes or no?
Oh, you get misdemeanors also.
Misdemeanors have been on there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and felonies. Yeah, a whole lot with in terms of criminal background checks. Well, we've had some changes with that over the years where, at least back in 2009, Minnesota blocked public employers from putting a criminal history check on their job applications. Then a few years later, in 2013, the legislature extended that prohibition to cover private employers. And now they're looking at expanding this even further in the state legislature, where they would change a state law that would prohibit job applicants on state boards and commissions from being asked whether they are a convicted felon. And the backing for the Ban the Box is really interesting, because you actually have, of all people who have been pushing this, the Koch brothers. Yes, those Koch brothers, those big Republican and conservative donors. And then we also have someone like Paul Gazelka, who is the Republican Senate leader, who is against actually making this expansion, and I kind of agree with him. He actually says by expanding Ban the Box, you could unintentionally hurt minorities. And I had to read more into this thinking, well, how does that actually make sense? And it kind of does in a way where if you're thinking and you don't actually have that question on your job application, have you been convicted of a felony, yes or no, you could actually get some employers who would naturally say, oh, well, I'm interviewing a black person. I'm just going to assume that they probably were convicted of some sort of misdemeanor or some sort of felony. So I get a little bit of that logic behind what Paul Gazelka is saying. And by the way, other critics have talked about that as well with Ban the Box. So
I sort of get what he's saying, yeah. But it seems like backwards logic, where like he figured out his position and then tried to come up with a reasoning for it. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's also no data showing that it's actually been helping felons actually get jobs.
No, I can't imagine people are being helped by this.
Yeah, yeah. There's no data showing that this thing
also,
is actually...
like, a lot of POCs are, like, disproportionately felons. Mm-hmm. So I don't see how that helps them either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just kind of strikes me as being a way for white people who are employers to say, oh, well, look at all this good we're doing in the world. It's very self-satisfying on their point, when in reality, it doesn't look like it's actually doing anything to help. I would think it would almost be the situation where if you are someone who just was released from prison and you are a convicted felon, I would think if you are going into a job interview, you might almost want to admit to that point and say, all right, well, I did make some mistakes in my past. I've learned my lesson and I'm ready to be a functioning member of society. Obviously, I'm not a career coach, because that's a horrible explanation I just gave right there. But
probably bad advice, too.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I think that actually does work, because if you have been convicted of a felony and you have a criminal background history, people are probably going to find out about that through the power of Facebook and social media and LinkedIn and even just using the power of Google. People probably will find out. So I would think you might increase your chances of actually possibly getting a job by just being upfront about your past. And also there's something I think we could add in there as well, where you can maybe even provide some sort of tax rebate for companies that actually hire convicted felons. I think that would be a good start as well in terms of trying to have some reform. In fact, that's actually kind of going back to an episode of The Office from a number of years ago, where they were when Michael, who of course is the manager of the Scranton branch, absorbed another branch, and one of the guys that was transferred over was a convicted felon. And, of course, being the comedy series that it was, everyone was trying to figure out who the felon was, which then did end up actually being the black guy who worked at the office. But in the episode, this is something I specifically remember, whoever his manager was saying, oh, yeah, that's actually a good idea to bring him on because we get a tax credit by actually having a convicted felon on staff due to some sort of state program they had in place. So maybe that could be a much better solution than just having the little thing where you ban the box and then everyone just guesses whether you have a felony or not. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Get to a few more stories in our final segment as you're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
As a family-owned business, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning has been serving the Twin Cities since 1930. A new furnace or air conditioner from Standard Heating and Air can lower your monthly utility bills, administer more consistent temperatures, and even improve indoor air quality, making your home safer and healthier for the whole family. The average heating and cooling system lasts 15 to 20 years. So if yours is on its last legs, call Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. Learn more at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve.
February is the month of love. Hey, it's Brett from FYI Politics. And when's the last time you gave your carpet some love and attention? Not only is your carpet one of the biggest investments in your home, but it's also the biggest air filter. So breathe better this month and get three rooms zero-res clean starting at only $119. And because love has no limits, zero-res will throw in a free hallway cleaning and will take 10% off your entire bill if you get your air ducts and carpet cleaned together. But you have to mention AM950 when you call. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMinnesota.com.
No matter what your taste, you'll find the music you're looking for at The Electric Fetus. Pick from rock, pop, international, roots music, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Or create your own compilation of favorites with the exclusive Mix and Burn CD station, only available at The Electric Fetus. Dust off your vinyl or just make some space by turning your unwanted music into cash. The used selection changes daily, so check out the new arrivals often. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Hi, I'm Frank Brown, owner of the only minority-owned union print shop in Minnesota.
Do you work with political campaigns?
Yes, we have years of experience helping campaigns.
Do you help with design?
Yes, our employees have over 100 years of industry experience and are the best at what they do.
So you print anything a political campaign might need?
Yes, we print everything. Work with a printer for your political campaign that shares your values. Minuteman Press Uptown. Learn more at mpuptown.com. Minuteman Press Uptown. We print everything.
Get a head start on this year's Blue State Ball by having dinner with me, Tom Harbin, on Saturday, February 22nd at Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club. It's your chance to chat with me about all the big political issues in a small, intimate setting. Crooner's is located just north of Minneapolis off Moore Lake and Highway 65 and has plenty of free parking. Tickets are $200 and include a delicious dinner at Crooner's, drinks, and a signed copy of my new book, The Hidden History of the War on Voting, Who Stole Your Vote and How to Get It Back. Tickets are very limited for this event, so guarantee your spot now by calling 952-946-8885. Don't miss out on your chance to have dinner with me the night before the Blue State Ball at Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club. Those tickets will go fast, so reserve now at 952-946-8885. More details at am950radio.com. I look forward to seeing you.
It's It's FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. One final segment left on the Friday edition of our show. Hey, you just heard Tom talking about the fact that you can buy a ticket to go have dinner with him at Crooner's Lounge at Supper Club the day before the Blue State Ball on Saturday, February 22nd. Those tickets are $200, and they're going to go very, very fast. And you got to purchase those by calling 952-946-8885. You actually got to call us here at the station. And if nobody answers, just leave us a voicemail and we will make sure we get a hold of you. But yeah, those I imagine are probably going to be gone by maybe even as early as next week. So get those sooner rather than later. Same with those overall Blue State Ball tickets too, because looking at some projections on the numbers for the Blue State Ball tickets, I'm like 99% confident we are going to sell out of those by probably next Thursday or Friday. So get those now. We are not going to have any of those tickets available at the door. So you do need to purchase those Blue State Ball tickets ahead of time. AM950radio.com. The Blue State Ball, Sunday, February 23rd, with VIP at noon and then general admission at 1. So far, Tom Hartman is the big headliner, but we are expecting lots of political guests, too. Just knowing the schedules of politicians, they typically don't confirm with us whether they are going to be there or not till like the day before. So do expect a lot of political guests at the Blue State Ball over at Bauhaus Brew Labs in Minneapolis. Lots of different ways you can get a hold of us here at AM 950 Radio and also my show, FYI Politics. You can watch the Facebook feed, also call us at 952-946-6205 or send us an email to comment at am950radio.com. Lisa yesterday on Facebook was commenting about how I was making this argument how a lot of people end up voting based on their pocketbooks. And Lisa made the comment saying that, "I understand those who vote for their pocketbook, but most minorities vote their and their children's safety." And she does bring up a good point, especially for people who are, well, not white people, that they probably do vote for their safety, or in some cases choose not to vote whatsoever if they don't think either party is actually going to make them or their children safer. So I think she does bring up a good perspective because, well, I'm just a big old white guy sitting here talking about it. But good point brought up by Lisa on the Facebook feed. Earlier, we were talking about Mitt Romney and his history at Bain Capital and how he was partially responsible for, well, ruining radio around the country. Well, in a very Bain Capital type move, Alden Global Capital, who owns the Pioneer Press, is going to be buying 11 small town newspapers around the metro area. And Eric, what could possibly go wrong with a company that has capital in their title? That should be a hint right there. If capital is in your company's title, you're out for some no good.
It's like a political party with the word brotherhood in the name. It's like, ooh,
yeah,
a good start.
Yeah, exactly. There is no good political party, yeah, with the name brotherhood in there. The Brotherhood of Capitalists should be a political party right there.
Yeah.
I like that name. Anyways, we have Alden Capital buying newspapers in Chaska, Chanhassen, Eden Prairie, the Lake Minnetonka area, Jordan, Prior Lake, Savage, Shakopee, International Falls, Hutchinson, and Litchfield. So outside of a couple of those northern Minnesota towns, if you live in the southwest metro area, unfortunately expect a lot of job cuts at your local hometown newspapers, which is too bad to hear because the history of Alden Capital is that they've taken profitable local newspapers, bled them dry by slashing jobs, they walk away from the profits, and the newspapers go out of business. Yeah, very sad to see. At least with the Chaska Herald, though, a buddy of mine who works over there as their sports reporter said, thus far, no staff firings yet, and hopefully that remains the case. So follow along with your local hometown newspaper and make sure you support them. That's all the time I got for today. Matt McNeil is coming up next.